Hello and welcome to the Copper State Marching Podcast, sponsored by the Arizona Marching Band Association, AZMBA. I'm Aaron Vogel.
And I'm Mark Hodge, and we're thrilled you're joining us for our podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, MVP Apparel, Music and Arts, Vic Burns and Zildjian, Synced Up Designs, Milano's Music, Music for All, MacPack, Music Celebrations International, SchoolFunder.org, Bravo Video Creations, LLC, and Yamaha.
The AZMBA Copper State Podcast was created to bring together the Arizona Marching Band community and connect, educate, and entertain those involved in this wonderful activity. Our goal is to introduce our audience to some of our state's wonderful directors, staff members, and adjudicators, and to promote our circuit and our season shows. We would like to welcome Matt Kozak, band director at Campo Verde High School and the president of AZMBA. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate being able to be on here again.
Yeah, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. Our podcast today is on the spring timeline for success. Can you talk us through your timeline for marching band or marching production?
Well, I think a lot of people don't start early enough. They wait until March, April, May to start figuring out like what they want to do for the next year, and they just with how much goes into show planning nowadays, like, you know, with design and different moments that you want to create and, you know, concepts and prop, you know, potential props and just all that stuff. I mean, it just takes so much time to piece that together. You got to start way earlier. So I think the biggest thing is just like start early. Like we started listening to music that we liked before we were even done with our previous season. So like November, we were kind of listening to some things and then we didn't really make any decisions about anything until maybe December or January, but by December, January, we kind of had a good idea of like what we liked and what we didn't like. And, you know, if you listen to something many, many times, like three or four times in a row and you still love it, like, you know, it's something that you're going to be able to put up with for months on end. So that's kind of where we start off is maybe December, January, you know. Around there.
Yeah, I had a 30-day play rule myself. I had to listen to it for 30 days. And if I still liked it, then we would probably do it.
Yeah. I mean, because you just don't want to like, you don't want to be doing a show where, you know, you just can't stand the music, right? Because you're doing it so much. So you got to make sure that you really love it.
Yeah, in your timeline, Matt, so when you're listening to music, November, December, making a call, January, or by the latest in February, you're picking the music first and then the show theme or visual concept comes out of that? Or are you really thinking about the visual concept first and then trying to, you know, put music into the spots that would match the theme?
I think, you know, we've kind of done it at Campo. We've done it more like music first. Like we listen to different things that we really like and like, you know, what's really effective. Like if we listen to something and it really moves us or if it's just like, oh my gosh, like that's so cool. That sounds great. Or, the kids are going to love that, or the audience is going to love that, or the, you know, it's going to pull on heartstrings or whatever. Like, you know, we listen to that and then we go from there and say, you know, what do we want to do now with it? Like visually, like we don't ever, and we typically do shows that have been like the music has been written already, but like, we don't want to do what anybody has done before. So we don't want to like take that, you know, that like whoever, whatever band did it originally, I don't even like look at their videos. I don't even want to see their videos. I don't want to see what they did before. I want to like, you know, take what we hear and what we like and make it ours. So we like to do music first because I think that that's what we're in it for the most, right? I mean, like music is like that's the foundation of our performance. So I really like the music to just be super good. And then we can make visual that'll match that. But I know a lot of people that come up with a concept though, and then they're like, let's go start finding music that is going to fit this concept. So, I mean, I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do it. It's just, you know, that's how we've found success.
Yeah, us too. We always did music first and then pulled the concept from that. Mark, how about you?
Both ways. Just depends on what's stronger in your mind. Is the visual concept or the show concept or the music, like whichever like presents itself the strongest, then we focus on that and then add the other. So it really doesn't matter. Like you said, Matt. So yeah. Matt, who's in the room where it happens? Who's in the room with you when you're doing all that?
Well, I like to include a lot of our like caption head stuff. We have, I think it's really important to have our guard instructor has to be involved because they're going to be doing so much of the visual design of the show and figuring out, what kind of costumes are going to work that's going to go along. So we got to be on the same page with our color guard instructor. So definitely color guard, definitely visual caption heads that are helping with body and design and what we want to do with that. I have our woodwind and brass instructor, those caption heads, just because sometimes we want to do like little rewrites and stuff, or we'll like say, we really like this, but we want to like beef it up, or we want to like water this down because it's a little bit too much for that section. So we have them involved, percussion and caption heads involved. So really just kind of like visual, woodwind, brass, guard, and percussion caption heads are usually all involved with this whole process. Sure that our kids can achieve it at a high level and make some adjustments and things like that. Same thing with like the woodwinds and brass parts though too, to be honest. Sometimes there's solos written for instruments where we're like, well, we have a really great, such and such player this year. We might want to showcase them. So we'll change a solo that was written for somebody else just highlight our best players,
Yeah, that's a great idea. I remember when I was teaching, I would actually open up all solos. So every solo in the show, this is the part one solo, and this is the part three solo, and they were open to anyone. If the kids asked for that to be written for their instrument, we would write it out and then let the best one win, you know. And that really was a cool way to early on see, who those solos were going to be. And there were a number of times where, it was originally written for a clarinet, but we had a superstar saxophone, or it was originally written for, 1 year we had a bassoon. It was originally a euphonium, and we had a killer all-state bassoonist, so we changed it to bassoon. So yeah, just going with the strengths, the individual strengths of the kids is smart. Yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely, yeah.
So once you've got all that done, you've kind of got it all put together, do you do a show reveal? And if you do, when do you do it? Walk us through their process for that.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to get the kids excited, especially nowadays. Like, I don't know if I'm sure other schools are facing the same situation, but like, registration for next year's bands and electives are so early. Like, some schools are registering in like December and January, and our registration started at Campo like mid to late January. And the eighth graders, they're deciding what they're going to do in high school at that time. And so we did a reveal for all of our band kids at one of our recruitment events. Like, we had the eighth graders come up and played a basketball game with us at a pep band. And if we call it Coyote Band Day, and they come up and they learn a little bit of marching, and then we play band camp games with them and things like that. And they go to we have pizza, we go to a basketball game. And one of the things we do during the day is we talk about next year's show, and all the high school kids are so excited about it. And then the eighth graders are like, oh, they're like looking around and everybody's all excited, so they're excited. So it's a great way, I think, to keep everybody like, let's looking forward to the future. So I think it's always good to do that reveal. And we just want to do it when it's going to be the most strategically like the best for our. Now, if we didn't know the show, of course we would hold off on that. But since we already knew, we were like, well, may as well let the kids know so that they're hyping about it,
Yeah, so that already happened for the fall. Wow.
We did that in late January, when we did our pep band stuff. And so the kids already know what the show is. They're looking forward to it. They're excited about it. We're using some of the show music for our drum major auditions, which are next week. So the drum majors have to conduct some of it and everything. And so we want to set our leadership like now, like spring break, so that again in like April and May, when we're starting to do our registration meetings and starting to do chop shops and spin clinics and things like that to get ready for the summer, that our section leaders are already set, and they're starting to plan little hangouts with their sections and welcome in the eighth graders to the program. And they have little get-togethers at their houses and things like that. So I mean, it's just good to kind of make that transition early. If you wait till summer to start doing all that stuff, I mean, sometimes you lose those kids, so
Because they already made their schedule, vacations and all that. Yeah. When do you order your costumes, flags, visual items like props? When do you start doing those?
That's man, that's tough because one of the other things we do is really exciting, and we love doing this is we have when school gets out, we have what's called dead week where like we don't do anything banned. So the last week of school and then the first week of summer is off. Like we don't touch anything. Like the kids don't rehearse. We don't have any camps. We don't have anything like because they're so busy doing winter season and winter guard and all these different things. So like we're like take some time. Like take 2 weeks at least. We're just not going to do anything. So we don't do that. But then the staff goes away on a retreat. We go up to a cabin up in Heber, we go up on a Friday. We stay Friday night. Stay Saturday night. And that's our design retreat. So we go up there and we just like talk through all of our show, like what moments we want to create, what kind of props we want to use, what kind of what kind of colors we want to use with the show, what the guard uniforms might start looking like, different moments that we want to have that we give our drill rider and such. And so we really just plan out like the whole show on the in those couple days. And then that way we can give that all to our drill rider. As far as like ordering stuff, you got to do it early because there's so many companies now that it takes them many weeks to get those things back to you. We also found that if you do it early, sometimes companies will give you those sales because they're not in their peak season yet. So like if you know what you're doing by end of May, we were able to get last year, we were able to get our performance tops for like I think they were $40 a piece. And so,
Pretty
I mean,
good.
that was a killer deal to be able to put every one of our kids in a performance top for, I mean, what was it? Maybe, $1,500, $2,000, something like that. So it wasn't too bad as far as the cost because we did it early, But then if you wait till August, they're going to charge you $70 per top, and
And
it's
you may
going
not
to
get them in
take them.
time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you go through the expense. I mean, that's, even 1500, 2 grand, that's a lot of money for most programs. So you go through that whole expense, you order it late, and then it doesn't show up for the first show, doesn't show up for the first football game, and then that can create its own issues. Why go through the expense if it's not going to get there? I always June 1st for me was always that, like, hey, we got to make sure the costumes, flags, if you're doing printed vinyls for the props, anything like that. And the t-shirts, you got to have the show shirt. So there's a big thing there. What kind of, thinking about more of the pedagogy side and the teaching side, what are things that you do in the spring semester, maybe with the concert program or even with the kids at all to get them ready to be able to handle the show in terms of fundamentals?
I mean, we all know that like your spring semester is where you just really nail down your concert chops and like you're working on your range and your articulations and just like really making developing those kids like as far as the individual performance. So like with our with our especially with our younger band at Campo, like we spend a decent amount of time talking about clean articulation and clean and clear, and we go down the line and we check, I check the kids for like, are they doing it properly? And then use metronomes and work your way up and all those kinds of things. And then that way, when we get to the fall, like we can do some things that are a little bit more challenging because most of those kids have got that. Of course, we don't have the eighth graders yet. So like, there's a lot of teaching to be done once they get up there, but at least the high school kids will know that have that like foundation of this is what it's supposed to sound like, this is how we achieve it, and then we build on top of that. So we definitely do a lot of preparation in the spring, but it's not really like we don't tell the kids it's for marching band because I don't really want them to think that that's what they're doing it for. It's for everything. It's for concert, jazz, I mean everything. Like we just spend a lot of time in the spring doing it. But we don't really want them to know that. And then honestly, I don't even know if that's really accurate that it is for all marching band. It is for everything. We just focus a lot on that and then it carries over.
Completely. Yeah, having at least musical fundamentals year round is the key. Clearly is a key to success. There's often a debate about, is the marching band playing different than the concert band playing? I try to keep it as similar as possible, but in marching band, going to be louder. You know, there's going
Yeah,
to
I mean,
have to play
there's
out.
going to be parts where you're just a little bit more aggressive, and you're going to put a little bit more behind it than you would if you were sitting down. But like, that's for the effect moments. But it's really not going to change like how you attack a note or how you release notes and things like that. It's just going to change more kind of like that, the sound, like you said, the volume or the size of that sound that you can create.
Yeah.
Are there any other processes that help set up a program for success that you do in the spring besides what we've already talked about? Are there any more processes? You're doing a lot of after school stuff, like your leaders meeting with each other at their houses and their sections and all that. What else do you do besides that?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to. I mean, you have to be. There's so many times again when I'm talking to like directors that they're like, "Yeah, we're not really sure what we're doing yet." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, you have to be on the front end of this whole thing. Like, you have to really start thinking about it ahead of time. You have to have meetings with those parents, like meetings with the incoming parents. So we have like an or a Campo Verde band orientation meeting where every kid that's coming into the program. All those parents come and we sit down and we talk to them about all the different facets of the program and the concert and the jazz and the marching and all these different things. And of course, we really encourage the kids to be involved in all of it, but sometimes our kids will be in one or the other, not all three or whatever, and that's fine. But we just want to make sure that we're presenting all the information that we're like letting the families know what they're becoming a part of, why band is so great. I mean, what their kids are going to learn, and how much they're going to learn, and how much discipline they're going to have, and how much we're going to hold their feet to the fire when it comes to grades and push them, and all these different things. And every parent in the world should want their kid to be in band. So we just really like, we really emphasize a lot of those things that the life lessons that we teach. And so I just think communication is really important in that spring semester. Staying ahead of things, it really helps you kind of lay that foundation for everybody else to be, to be involved.
Wow, cool. I mean, what's very clear from all of the successes that you've had in all areas of the program, jazz, concert, fall, winter, that the organization that goes behind it, and ho hopefully folks that are listening to the podcast get an idea of just how much planning and organization goes into that, and how early that timeline can be. Well, we really want to appreciate you, Matt, for sharing those thoughts, and I hope that helps folks. At the end of our podcasts, we like to do shout outs. So is there anyone or anything, I suppose, that you want to give a shout out to as we end the call?
Oh yeah, definitely. We just got done wearing actually my show shirt today. I'm gonna shout out my kids from both the winter percussion and the winter guard today. They had their WGI regional. Both groups just did an amazing job. They're both advancing on to finals. Drums are going tonight. Guard is going tomorrow. And man, they're working their tails off. So if they're listening, great job to the students and. Keep kicking butt this winter season because they're doing awesome.
Oh, congrats. That's awesome. Great. Thanks so much, Matt. And to our
Yeah, man.
audience, to our audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. Like Matt was saying, we hope that everyone is having a fantastic concert season. Great job with their winter guard and their indoor percussion shows, and for their concert
Area
programs.
and concert festivals, jazz festivals. That's great.
Yeah, this is a busy time of year for
It's
sure.
always a busy time of the year, let's be honest.
It's, there was not a free weekend.
Yeah.
In this episode, we speak with Daniel Berard, retired band director from Colorado, Texas, and Missouri, and the founder and CEO of B Elevated Music Education and Development. What's up, Dan?
Hey, hi everybody. Thanks for having me on today.
Great. It's great to see you. Thanks for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I'm originally from Wisconsin, and I did my undergraduate at University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. But my first teaching job was out here in kind of suburban Denver, Colorado. So I spent most of my teaching career in Colorado. I was in the Denver area for about 10 years, and then had a great opportunity to open a new school in Fort Collins, which is on the north side of the Denver metro area, and it was called Foss Ridge. So spent a good chunk of time there, and loved it. That's where Aaron and I actually connected. We were teaching partners for a good run. We had a good run. And then I took advantage of an opportunity to go to suburban Kansas City for a couple of years and kind of help with the program that was there. And then COVID hit, and kind of made my way down to Texas. So I was at Wakeland High School in the north part of Dallas. And so that was a great time, great team, incredible program that was kind of hitting on all cylinders. And it was just a lot of fun. So now back at living in Colorado, and I'm retired. And so just doing a lot of like independent work. I'm also a professional photographer, so I'm doing a lot of that and working with bands and just trying to get a new venture off the ground as well. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I saw that, of course, going around the social media thing and the Be Elevated. Tell us a little bit more about, the idea behind, getting the company going and what you're doing.
Well, right now, it's just getting going. It's kind of a play on the way students always referred to me. I was never Mr. Berard. I was always Mr. B. And then obviously spending a lot of time here in Colorado, the play on that word. But basically our mission is to provide resources as much as we can, whether that's individual, online, print resources, rehearsal techniques, anything that we can do to help bands, band directors, and band students really elevate their pedagogy, their performance level. We're adding in clinic sessions, that have been presented so that we can have, real tangible resources for band directors to try. As we get going here, we're doing weekly kind of teaching tips and pedagogy tips. It's also kind of a one-stop shop for, whatever a band director might feel they need, either personally, professionally, or programmatically in terms of their development. So whether that's, repertoire selection or assessment strategies, kind of a full gamut drawing on the experience of a lot of people who've been in there, involved in music education for a long time. After doing it for, to the point, I was a band director for 31 years. You end up getting great resources from a lot of people, and I've had incredible mentors. So I'm really excited to kind of pass that on and share that. My kind of passion now that I'm not in the classroom is really helping, especially band directors, grow and thrive and find joy and passion in doing this job that's so critical yet so unbelievably demanding. So that's kind of our focus, is really just helping band directors find what do you need to thrive and what do you need to really elevate yourself, your students, your teaching, your band program. So that's our mission. And as we continue to expand that, we look to bring people on, make our resources available nationally. And so it's right now, it's a fun project.
That's great. That kind of ties into what our podcast is about today. It's about a spring timeline for success. Can you talk us through what worked for your programs in terms of timeline for the fall marching show?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a valuable and critical time. If you're looking in terms of design, I think now is really a great time to just be sitting down. And, if you're at this point, here we're at March 1st. If you're not already in the process of planning for the fall, it's probably time to maybe get those gears moving. Certainly this is also a great time to just really step back, and maybe you're a little bit removed from kind of the pressures or the emotions of the fall, and you're not quite into the pressures and the emotions of the fall. So this is a great time to really, step back, evaluate realistically and honestly, what are the things that your kids do well? What are the things that the program does well? What are our budget constraints or limitations? What are our strengths in terms of sections, you know, what are some things we might want to feature? What are the things that I just as a, you know, as a musician, what types of things artistically speak to me? You know, so that as you're in that process of going. So I know for me, it's kind of evolved over a lot of times. There was a lot of times where we would be, you know, we hit on something, you know, we begin that discussion around January and we hit on something right away and, you know, things fall into place and, you know, creatively it just kind of, you know, sometimes it's real easy and sometimes it's, you know, you just kind of have to like, oh yeah, that's, I'm just not feeling right about X or Y or Z. And you kind of go back to the drawing board. So now's a great time, to really be reaching out and, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. There's, I'd say kind of the fully custom, you know, the fully custom music arrangement and visual design and the whole thing, you know, works for a percentage of groups. And for a large percentage of groups, I hope maybe if you take anything away from this discussion is there are so many unbelievable resources now that you don't have to reinvent the wheel every year. You know, and that may not be the best vehicle for you financially or creatively. And there's so many great resources and options and great creative people who make their, you know, that is their specialty to just provide great packages for shows or even mix and match packages for shows. So now's the time really to be solidifying all of that, you know, for whatever your situation really is, but I would go back and just stress again, it starts with just a really honest evaluation of where you're at and where you want to go. You know, if you've got 20 wind players, that's going to drive some different decisions than if you've got 220 wind players, you know. So you just really have to kind of be, and this is a really good time to step back and be really thoughtful and really, you know, intentional, I guess, with the decisions that you're making now, because it's going to affect every single day of your students' experience, you know, once band camp kicks in.
I like how you focus on the intentional part of it, and it doesn't matter the size of the group. I think that's you hit the nail on the head for a lot of our constituents that are going to listen in, is that it doesn't matter the size of the band. What it matters is the intentionality of your decision making, right? 20 kids, 200 kids, but making those decisions based on what the need is, it helps you
Yeah.
create the need, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's, you know, it's really incumbent upon directors to really kind of seek out, you know, what are kind of your like one-to-one peer evaluation groups? You know, I mean, like we would all, you know, we would all love to be the Hebron wind section, or we would all love to be, you know, the Avon, you know, marching, you know, just monster, or, you know, have, you know, the Carmel, you know, World Color Guard, or, you know, the Tarpon Springs just creative palette where, you know, you're really almost limitless in terms of what you could do. And that's awesome. If that's where you're at, then those are the groups that you really need to seek out and study and find what they're doing to be successful. But, you know, that's also not the reality for the vast majority of marching bands in the country. And so, you know, finding what is going to make your kids successful, and what does success mean for you in your community and, you know, given where you're at and the growth and, you know, what are all the things? And, you know, we're not necessarily talking about competitive success. We're talking about educational success. I think is the first and foremost thing that I would stress is, you know, a lot of, and I'm going to say this from having been there when I was younger. I can think of some decisions that I made that I was like, I'd like a redo on that one, because I was maybe thinking about other factors than my students' experience. And so, you know, that's just part of growing. So, you know, if you're in a small community, or you got a small band, then there are things that you can do to be wildly creative and very successful, but it's about being smart. Like, you know, for example, if you've only got, you know, if you got a small wind section, then you have to be really carefully about the number of splits, you know, and where in the instrument your arranger puts them. You know, I've sent stuff back like, hey, you know, we have four clarinets and we're never going to hear that low Shalamo thing. You know, like we're never going to hear a, we don't need a three-part flutes bit when I have eight flutes. You know, like, you know, get them together and put them in the wheelhouse, you know. So sometimes you have to make those decisions that, you know, if you're, you know, when I was at Wakeland and we were kind of a perennial, you know, 5A medalist, it's like, okay, well, they kind of can play anything, so let's throw it at them, you know, and then we could see. But even at that, we had to be really intentional. You know, there's like, if you're a large group, then it's like, then you have to kind of be strategic in terms of, you know, just because you can do almost anything doesn't mean you should do anything. You know, you have to kind of really pick and choose your moments where you can then design towards what the evaluation is going to be. If you're a smaller group, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't be wildly competitively successful. You just have to do things a little differently to maximize what your students can do and put them in a place where they're, you know, they're going to be successful and entertaining and achieving excellence. And I think that's the goal. So right now is the time to really be looking at that. And the great side of that is wherever you are on that spectrum, from, you know, BOA finalists to just need our football crowd to clap a little bit, you know, there are unbelievably good resources and references available to see people doing it at the highest level on, you know, all parts of that picture.
Yeah, I think about kind of what you're saying here is just being really honest, you know, with yourself and you know where the program is currently, strengths, weaknesses, musically and visually, just kind of where they're at. Will you talk us through maybe some of that development for kids in your programs? You know, what would you do in the spring semester to make sure that they were set up for success, maybe pedagogically or in terms of the program development?
I think that's the biggest thing. The first and foremost thing, you know, it comes down to the daily, you know, foundation that you're building every single day those kids walk in your classroom. You know, and if especially if you're in a situation where maybe your contact time is limited, there's kind of that like, maybe it might make sense, you know, or you convince yourself that, hey, we're going to train the kids fundamentally, like once we get them to the fall. But the reality is that that doesn't really happen a lot. You know what I mean? So like, it really is what you're doing in terms of developing their faces and their embouchures and their tone qualities and their range and their technique. Like when they show up in your classroom every day right now, musically, that's going to be, you know, whatever you know, wherever you get them to here in the spring is kind of like, that's a pretty good indication of probably where they're going to be in the fall. Because, you know, there's so many other aspects of the fall performance that if they're not fundamentally developed to begin with, you know, the time is just kind of limited to move that needle a lot in terms of fundamental development in the fall. You could certainly move that needle a lot in terms of performance quality for the show specific stuff, but developing happens now. And I think, you know, that's like you said, we're just being really honest about, you know, what you would do. You know, that I think that's a big part of how we design. And I would say as a band director, you know, for most of us as band directors, we come to the activity mute from a musical standpoint first, and then we learn the visual aspect of it as we go through our career. And that's, you know, that's neither here or there, but I think I know, and as I've judged around the country more, and I'm dealing more with mentoring younger band directors, a lot of people really are thoughtful about how they approach musically designing the show and musically teaching the kids. And but I think that level of scaffolding and forethought and sequencing of skill sets and how do we develop a fundamental program visually, and I'm not just talking marching basics, I'm talking like movement fundamentals, is maybe a little bit behind. And so if that's your case, it's probably really incumbent upon you now to sit down and go, okay, well, what movement skills are we going to try to include? And then like back engineering that. Okay, well, what are like just the basic physiological concepts of the body to make that work? What are the dance training needs of my students? You know, do I need to go take a dance class So I understand how to do a plié, and you know that may sound really like out of the ordinary, but like when modern movement really started becoming a thing in the marching band, like I was like, well, all right, I'm taking a month worth of dance classes just to kind of, if I can't do it, my kids probably can't do it, you know. So so just learning how the body moves, and so you know how now is the great time to like really then you know back that up. If you know that you want to be doing a lot of pop to plie, or you want to do a lot of forced arch, or whatever the hap you know the visual you know kind of vocabulary is, and that's not part of your wheelhouse of teaching, well then you owe it to yourself and your students to figure out like how to properly teach and execute that fundamental the same way you would with a trumpet lip slur. You know, I mean, there's no difference yet. A lot of times band directors maybe neglect that a little bit more because they're gonna, maybe you hire some kid that did a season of drum corps this summer to come in and help you out. And that may or may not be a good move, you know, might be a great move, but at the end of the day, you still are the most qualified and experienced teacher, you know, amongst your staff. And you may have great staff. I mean, we're, you know, fortunate to have great people, but at the end of the day, I'm still supposed to be the expert. And if I'm not the expert, I better go learn how to be the expert.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned scaffolding, and that's do I did a lot of that in my rehearsals where all those things you just talked about, I would hit on them every day. And
Absolutely.
I would adjust the amount based on the needs of where they were that week. Like if their performance on Friday was weak in visual, I would spend a little more time on visual or, and then the music. So, but it was like for me, that's how I adjusted. So, and equally moved forward. They wouldn't move past the thing that they were working on until it was ready, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I would say that's a great thing, you know, whether it's a musical fundamental or a movement fundamental or you know color guard equipment development or whatever, if you're waiting until band camp to really introduce a lot of those concepts, you're probably playing a little bit of catch up. And I would say the way that you know technology has made things so easy and so accessible, you don't need to, I'm not saying you need to go out and find people who are, you know, experts in movement. You don't have to have a, you know, a movement specialist on your staff if that's not a reality for you. But what is probably a reality is searching out a lot of great YouTube channels. You know, if you don't know, then, you know, find some of those great resources, you know, on the stuff that like the Breakdown Camp is doing is incredible. Or, you know, some of the videos that are available through like Dynamic Marching are incredible. And they can be, and they're all, you know, once you're kind of on board with that for a really kind of low entry fee, you know, they make a lot of really great educational videos available to your students. So if it's not your thing to, you know, how to teach tendu or how to teach a roll down exercise or something like that, you know, there are so many great resources that are available that, you know, you can really empower your kids to be part of their own instruction just by like, hey, this is all we're doing, and here's the video of the best person on the planet teaching and doing it. Like, all right, kids, you know, like section leaders, let's, you know, this is what you're doing, you know, this is what you're doing on Friday, so figure it out. There's just so many great resources that really not having that in your pedagogical wheelhouse is becoming less and less just to me acceptable as a professional. You know, as a professional, you would never go to a doctor that hasn't read a medical journal in 20 years. So why do we allow band directors to teach like visual fundamentals or music fundamentals, or you know, clean the marching band the way the drum corps did it in the 70s? Because it, you know, or 80s. That's just not how the activity is anymore. So.
Yeah, and I think you were talking about that, having a kid from DCI who just came back from the summer, who really is, they in their own skill development is light years beyond the vast majority of high school kids in the country. But then they're choreographing some, rond de jambe, wheel down to the ground, like something that if you were to do a musical analogy of
Sure.
that would be like, triple tonguing throughout the entire range of the instrument, just something that they're not prepared for. So having I just again to echo you and to echo what Mark echoed is that scaffolding of, okay, if we want to do this, in the fall, then we need to do these things now. And I would I'm sure some of my folks that help with the visual would probably cringe, but I would personally water the visual book. And if I couldn't do it, and I did take dance class, like gym or dance class in my background. But if I couldn't personally execute the visual move that the marching band students were asking, just the marching kids, not the color guard, it wasn't in the show. I mean, that's and if that folks ask, that's a thing. It's yeah, you
Yeah, you know what? I just think that that's such a I just think that that's such a critical component that's getting overlooked right now, because it's kind of exploded. And depending on what circuit you're on or what your sheets are, like, you know, it really has kind of like people are start throwing in stuff without preparing it. You know, and to your example, like you would never ask a kid to triple tongue if they can't actually articulate first. You know what I mean? And so, you know, so like how you go about developing those skill sets. And you don't need to reinvent that wheel. There's all kinds of great resources. Like I said, you know, like Michael Rosales' stuff, or you know, Jim Moore stuff, or the dynamic marching stuff. There's so many great things. Just, you know, get online and find some, or just ask, you know, like what I found about really successful band directors for the overwhelming most part. The overwhelming most part. It's not 100% true, but they're willing to share what they do and who they do it with. You know, if you have a band that you really admire, just like, hey, you know, man, I'm really like, you guys are crushing it on X. Could you just talk me through how you do it? And, you know, most of them will be like, yeah, how long do you know, like, here it all is. And it, you know, they've already got it laid out. So find that stuff. You know, so now would be the time to really focus on, you know, your systems, your processes, your plans, and your pedagogy before you start focusing on your production. You know, because most of the problems that happen in the fall are some sort of breakdown along the way between like January 1st and August 1st in one of those four things. It's a system and process problem. It's a pedagogy problem, it's a planning problem, or it's an implementation problem. It's probably not a production problem or performance issue. It's something that happened 2 months before the kids ever showed up, and then you double down on a bad decision, and then you live with that bad decision all through the fall.
Yeah, totally. And for the folks who are listening on the call, and just thinking about the timeline of this, it's March, so we're recording this on March 1st. It'll come out here in the next few days. 6 months from now is October 1st, which is the traditional in Arizona. That's the traditional start of the show of the competitive season. It's actually a little earlier now. That's 6 months away. That's not a ton of time to design and design the book of a new musical. I've often thought of a marching show like a musical that you're writing from scratch. So you've got the staging, you've got costumes, you've got props, you've got the music and the book, and that's a lot of stuff to do, and you want to make sure that the kids and the program are prepared. But luckily, that's one of the reasons why we're doing that this topic this at this time is just to get folks thinking about setting up that timeline for success now. So.
Absolutely. You know, and some of it, you know, to be really honest, those are really kind of situational. You know, when it comes to, you know, to like, you know, for me, kind of like the music book was always, you know, I mean, because that starts everything, you know. So getting the music book dialed in, and then, you know, getting, you know, numbers and drill and stuff like that. You know, we've done it, I've done it all kinds of different ways, where, you know, the drill is done in June, and you know your numbers, they're dialed in, and we lock it together. I've also done where, you know, the drill writer would come to my house for 4 or 5 days and stay with me, and we'd kind of storyboard, you know, we'd kind of storyboard it, and then like he would, you know, write all day, you know, and get the dots where they, and then at night as a staff we'd kind of get together, we'd look at it, and yeah, let's move on. And you know, and that process, you know, happened pretty late in the, you know, but we knew then exactly what we wanted. And also then too, it was kind of nice because like for that particular drill writer, like he did a lot of groups that wanted everything early, you know, and so try to like just be bogged down with that, you know, I knew I wasn't getting like his best work because he was trying to finish eight other groups at the same time. You know, so by moving, you know, for us moving it back, like when I was at Boss Ridge, we moved that process really far back because I knew I wasn't going to touch any dots until, you know, the second week of August at the best, you know, like, and then we know it's right. So it's just a matter of what you're, you know, what is your situation and being thoughtful and, you know, really, really, really intentional with decisions. You know, if you want to play the Hindemith symphony, well, you're not, you know, there are things that probably need to happen to lead up to that. You know, like you're not just going to get to freshman concert band, like, hey, everybody, here's the, you know, here's the Hindemith. You're going to move kids on a progression, and you should think about your show design, musically, visually, costuming, staging, props, all of that in the same vein. For whatever reason, we tend to kind of throw stuff out there at the last minute because we feel we need something. And if it's intentional and thoughtful, it can be very, very effective.
Yeah, and I would just add on to that, like, and we've all started programs that were already existing, but we've also, at least I have, and I think you have too, Dan, new programs like from scratch, just the very beginning. But for me, like, and I've talked to a lot of young band directors, you have to make a plan for that first year. You're not going to become Avon year one. Maybe you're 10, right? So like, what are your goals, your tangible goals for that season? Get the kids to like you, get the, you know, whatever they are. And then that's where you design your show from, right? Some of those goals, and like, I want them to march in time this season. That's a perfect goal. And then after that, a perfect goal in time and play music at the same time and sound good for your first. That's perfect.
For sure. You know, and I had the, you know, the great fortune of, you know, starting Fossil Ridge from scratch. And like, it was one of those really, you know, I was under a lot of pressure from the principal. He was like, you know, no, we're getting out there. And I was like, I need you to give me a year. We've got 24 kids, you know, like that. And it was in a community that had never, they had not done marching band in over 40 years in my community. So it was like, you know, I like, hey, we will be at the games and we will be rocking the stands and we will be involved in the community. But like, that is not a good decision now. And here's why. So we didn't start the marching band until year two. And even with that was kind of like, all right, we got 40 kids out there who have never, and most of them hadn't even seen a competitive marching band because it just wasn't a thing in the community. So to be really, you know, to be, that was a real different set of like goals. It was just like, okay, we want this to be something that they can feel proud of and not go out there, you know, on Friday night and just humiliate themselves in front of their peers. So what we asked of them was really different, you know, than jump ahead to, you know, that was 2004, jump ahead to 2012 when we're going up, you know, it's like, oh, like we're undefeated this year. You know, like we're going into state finals as like, this might happen, you know, like there's just unbelievably different things that we were asking of our students. But then we were also then having to ask of ourselves, you know, that required a really different level of commitment to how we train kids, and it required a really different level of commitment to how I communicated with those that were involved with my staff. Cause we, you know, when you got 30 kids out there, you can do it by yourself. When you got 200 kids out there, you probably need some help, you know? So, and that just, that, you know, that then changed, you know, so all of those, you just have to be really aware. Like I can't, you know, if I could give one piece of advice to everybody, like we all would love to be, you know, Vandegrift, or we all would love to be, you know, Avon, or you name it, you know, you name the group, every band director, we would love that. But I think what's really important is to really then like open the hood and find out what goes into making those. You know, nobody talks about Carmel from 1994 because it took a while, you know, like, oh yeah, now Carmel is the thing, you know, but it's, you know, it's that first 10 or 15, you know, same thing like with Boss Ridge, you know, I went back and I keep the video of that first performance just to make sure I don't ever lose perspective. You know, like when they, you know, they got to the first competition and were just terrified and fell apart in the opener. We had to stop and like, all right, go back to page 40, you know, like, and we'll start again, you know. But, you know, so like when you get these really successful programs, you know, whether it's Mountain Ridge or what, you know, any of these programs, it's really easy to talk about them when they're successful. But what you really need to do is go back and find out, okay, well, when was that program at the exact place that my program is? You know what I mean? And go and talk to those people, you know? And again, it's such a sharing community. Go and, you know, call Andy Seeley. Hey, Andy Seeley, what did the Hebron band sound like, you know, in year one? They probably sounded great, but they didn't sound like, you know, where they are now. Or, you know, hey, call Aaron Vogel. You know, what did the Mountain Range band, you know, where was the Mountain Range band at 6 years ago or 5 years ago or 2 years ago? There's things that you do different. And so I think by always trying to like copy like those pinnacle performing ensembles, you know, that are great. They're driving the activity forward and blah, 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 blah. But that's probably not our reality. You know, same thing for drum corps. I can't tell you how many band directors, you know, I'm like, well, can you explain to me why, you know, you're doing that fundamental warm-up exercise? Well, you know, we got it from the Blue Devils, or I picked it up from Carolina Crab. And I was like, well, you know, there's like 80 cats on the planet that can do that, you know, and most of them aren't sitting in your band room today. So, you know, you might need to be a little bit more thoughtful about what you're doing and what they need. So just, you know, it's just really truly about, you know, digging in and being honest. So.
Well, this is great. Dan, thanks so much for being on the call. And well, we like to end this, our podcast, with some shout outs. So do you have any shout outs that you'd like to give?
Shout outs, man. You know, yeah, kind of like everybody who's, you know, I mean, it seems kind of odd, but, you know, like we get stuff from everybody, you know. So I'd like to shout out that everybody's been on my team, you know, kind of a backstory. You know, Aaron and I were teaching partners, and, you know, last weekend we kind of got the band back together, and it was just so great to, you know, have my old team back together. And so I'd like to shout out my Foss Ridge team and that just the relationships we've built. It's great to see, you know, those relationships kind of continue after, you know, 10, 12, 14 years, you know, on, so that, you know, and then just, you know, find your mentors, whether it's a personal mentor or a professional mentor or a musical mentor. You know, for me, my shout out would be, you know, Richard Floyd. We do not have enough time for me to talk about how influential that man has been and how kind he's been and how generous he's been with his wisdom and how much he's been willing to take me under his wing and help me get better. So I guess that would be my shout out.
I love that. Well, thanks so much. And hey, to our audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. And we hope everyone who's listening is getting a lot out of these podcasts and also having a fantastic concert season, great performances at their festivals, Winter Guard, indoor percussion, all that. Our next podcast is going to be on show design on a budget, and you definitely won't want to miss that. Bye, everyone.